If you're just joining us, got to say good morning and welcome to She Speaks right here on Radio Caribbean International. Of course, brought to you the kind compliments of our sponsor, Bank of St. Lucia. I am honored and privileged to have as the guest on She Speaks, my actual former history teacher back at St. Mary's College. And it's so, so good to have her on the line with me this morning, Miss Deborah Edwards. Good morning.
Good morning, Ron, and I am likewise. I am really elated. I thought Maureen was doing the interview.
Yes,
Deborah is an ex-Samarian, makes me a little more relaxed.
Yes, it's amazing. I mean, you're such an inspiration to, especially me, interested in the media services, because of course you were very instrumental on the DBS sports news back in the day. You made sports news more interesting to watch. What was that experience, and how did that happen?
Well, you know, let me just thank Radio Caribbean. I had, you know, a little bit of news where I really wanted to do this, but I really want to thank them. So tell you a little bit about media. When I taught at St. Mary's College, I wanted to go back out to do my master's. It's not a secret. I grew up very poor. I grew up in what at the time was Conway. Mm-hmm. And I was raised by a single father. And I knew that to get back to doing my master's, I needed additional funding. At the time, I was teaching, and a teaching job would not have afforded me the opportunity to save enough, pay my bills, and go back to study. So I remember Linda Daher approached me one day. I was actually watching a basketball game, and I was doing all the commentary on the sideline. I was saying, no, freak, dribble. And, you know, I was touching it to me, and she said, you really love basketball. I said, well, I really love all sports. I can talk about almost any sport on the planet. And she said, really? So she said she's looking for a news anchor. So I told her, well, I teach, and if I can do it on evenings, I would be happy to do it. And told her the story that I want to go and study. And, you know, the next day I was at DBS, she called me and said, you know, you have a voice that makes people want to listen, so I think you'll be good on TV. So I went. At the time, it was Pete Ninval, Wayne Whitfield, Bradley Lacker, and that was our crew. That was the squad.
Right, right.
So they really introduced me to sitting in front of the camera, how to switch cameras for the break. And that's how I got into the media. It just was something that I did really to save money to go out to do my master's. And when I came back in, of course, I was grateful for the opportunity with DBS. So I continued doing little part-time, little gigs for them, mm-hmm. until I got into the fuel industry and my time was no longer mine.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, very interesting. That's something that we definitely have to talk about, because you're representing for the ladies, just being three female general managers in the company. And, of course, the only female for a major petroleum company across the OECS. We've got so much to talk about that later down in the interview. But let's touch on something that you mentioned. In your introduction, you were raised by a single father, not common in our society. What was that like, and how did that influence your life?
So I'm originally from Deriso. Shout out to the Miku Pasi. So I'm originally from Deriso, and my dad was a taxi driver. My mom left very early. And, you know, I guess because he was raising girls and boys, because at one point in time, there were seven or so of us in the house. My father was extremely strict on us. He insisted that, you know, poverty was not a life sentence. Poverty was just a situation, and the way out of poverty was the books. Now, the strangest thing I will tell you is my father was not able to read. Mm. And I only discovered that very late on in my life, because my father would sit with me with a book, and I would have to tell him, read the story to him and tell him, and he would make these gestures that I swore I would pronounce a word wrong or I said something wrong. So I always thought that my father was able to read, until much later on I discovered, you know, that he didn't have the opportunities that I had to, you know, go to primary school, etc. So, you know, for me, being raised by a single dad, one of the things that he instilled in me very early, that, you know, family is extremely important. Mm-hmm. That we were always together. But many people tell me they remember us La Panse, because later on we moved to La Panse. They remember us, you know, with George holding hands. You know, my father with his line of children going to cathedral to church. We did everything together. So we held hands. to go to church, to come back. And even in that dynamic, one of the things that I think has kind of made me who I am is the protection I got from my mainly the boys in my family. Mm-hmm. So my brothers were extremely protective. They took me everywhere. They went. And that's how I also got into basketball, playing in the gardens. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Gardens with all these rough guys, Big Jerry, and all these names that I remember. And I would go on the court and say, I want to run. I want to play.
Wow.
And my brother Fudge, you know, introduced me to basketball. I don't think I was an exceptional basketball player, but I think I was good. I played for St. Lucia. I went to represent St. Lucia on a team in Guyana. People like Sierra Lee was there with us. So I grew up a little rough. I grew up, you know, struggling and saying, you know, like, it's my turn. I need a run. And that kind of has helped mold me to who I am today. So I'm extremely strong-willed. If I say this is what I want to do, I'm going to do it. Nothing is going to detour me from that course. And a lot of that I attribute to the discipline of my father and the sheltering of my brothers when I was growing up.
Indeed. Where you start in life is no sign of where you will end. This is your life's mantra. And of course, you went a student of St. Joseph's Convent, and you further went on to UWE. Let's talk about your first degree and your interest in that field.
So, you know, when I was at, I taught at St. Joseph's Convent. So when I left A-level, I was a little too young to go to university, having won a scholarship to go to school. So my father, you know, said that I should work for a while before I go back out. And Sister Claire took me in. I was very young at the time. In fact, many of the students that I taught, I would have met them at St. Mary's. I was in Form 5 when people like Sierra Lee was in Form 3.
Wow.
So I came back to teach them. And
wow.
I loved teaching. I thought that teaching was my calling. So I decided when I went to UWE that I would do, you know, my degree in history and political science.
Mm-hmm.
I had this weird notion that I would be some great historical writer, writing books and things. So I came back from UWE, and there was no opening again at St. Joseph's Convent. The position was filled. So the ministry sent me to St. Mary's College.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And St. Mary's College was an interesting journey. I really enjoyed being there. You would have remembered me being on the court playing basketball.
Yes. And you're very strict. I just want to point that out. I mean, you are very, very, very strict.
So, you know, a few people have told me that. You know, I remember about you at St. Mary's, always giving detention.
Yeah, indeed. I never got one, thank God. I was afraid of you. I'm not going to lie. I was afraid of you.
So I don't think I was strict, you know, unnecessarily. I mean,
yeah.
As a female, I'm teaching at an all-male school and just trying to get the boys to, because boys and girls are different.
Yeah.
Don't have to push girls to study and to do the SBAs and to do their work. Boys are a little different, so you have to kind of hold their hands and nudge them along. So I think I gave detention quite a bit for boys not doing the SBAs or the POB work, etc. But I don't think I was unnecessarily strict, but more to get the boys to do their work so that they would excel. And I can tell you, the years I taught at St. Mary's, I think that was the only 2 years St. Mary's beat St. Joseph's Convent. Now the convent girls who are listening, don't feel bad, because I'm an ex-convent girl, but I'm telling you, the 2 years, that was the only years, from my recollection, St. Mary's beat St. Joseph's Convent.
Is the detentions that worked.
Probably.
And not, apart from that, you also went on to do a degree in law. How did the interest in law happen?
So when I left teaching, I worked with Harris for a little while. I was offered an opportunity to work in sales and marketing with Harris. And one day I found out about this company called Saul. And, you know, I applied, got through, but I realized a lot of the work that I was doing for a lot of the commercial customers involved contracts. So you got to deal with X business, you have to get them to sign a contract. And many times what I found, I would send a request for a contract to be done for me for a customer, and basically it was out of my hands, so I would have to wait maybe a week or so to get it done. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to do a law degree, I'm going to go into law, I'm going to come back, I'm going to practice. So I studied with Huddersfield University via distance. I went to England, however, to graduate, because I was excited to be the Caribbean girl graduating.
Yeah,
so I went to England, graduated. And along the way, I said to myself, I'm not so sure I want to do law. I'm not so sure I want to go to court and practice. So I came back to my employer because they really encouraged me right through this degree, and they gave me time off when I needed to study at all. So I came back to my then boss, and I said, you know, I said I wanted to join the legal department at Saul, but I am not so sure I want to do that. I think I like talking to people about goods and services and trying to convince them that even when they don't need something, that they need it. So I figured, you know, yes, the law degree helps me. Even in working in Dominica, a lot of the contracts I did them myself and just sent it for reviewing. So I felt that, you know, my natural calling and my natural inkling is in sales. So I journeyed back to that department, led the sales team here, and from there traveled to Dominica.
That's pretty amazing, especially the fact that, I mean, you graduated with honors, and to just say, you know what, that's not my calling, and go back to your natural love. That is pretty amazing. And through it all, you still managed to be a mom, an amazing mom to three beautiful children. Tell us how you're able to balance that, especially having to be away so often doing your studies.
Yeah, so I was telling a friend, people are talking about virtual learning. I think I invented virtual learning. Because, so I had my first, I had my daughter. My daughter is 21. She's at medical school right now. And I had my two boys. But my job at Saul took me out. I tell people, in my early days, almost every month I was on a plane. But I realized that I needed to be mom to my kids. So after my meetings, whether I was in Miami, wherever I was in the world, I always set times that I would call in to the kids and say to them, what's your homework? Anything new to report? Send me, let me see if there's something, a question that you need me to help you with. I'm not very good at maths. I am an expressive person. So whenever, you know, they had an essay or something, I would review these things for them. Stay with them on the phone and go through why this is not how it should be. So I have done that, I am with the company in my 16th year. Mm-hmm. So I have done that for most of my 16th year. My two boys, my first son is 19. So I actually schooled him really from planes and from hotel rooms. Similarly, my last child, Obama, he has spent most of his time being nurtured and taught by me via distance.
That is amazing. How do you do it? Like, honestly, how do you make the time? And what advice can you give to young mothers who probably find it hard to balance career and still being present with their family?
So, you know, the strange thing is I am probably a very organized person. And what I can say to people is you need to make time for the things that's important. So at the start of the week, I slot everything out. So at the start of the week, I know what I'm going to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And every single day, wherever I am in the world, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. is family time. So I will take a WhatsApp, I will take a call, but I allot that time for my kids to tell me things, to say what is happening with them. During my normal working day, when I'm at work, I am at work. So I'm very focused. So somebody might be at work for 4 hours, and I might be at work for an hour and a half. But in that hour and a half, I'm so driven and so task-oriented that I will hit all of my targets, that I can move on to something. So I think my advice is, you know, develop a schedule, and when you develop it, try to stick to it. Mm-hmm. A lot of time for what is important, family, and a lot your me time. So my friends, and I know they're listening, so they don't like to line with me because by 9 o'clock I'm fast asleep. I fall asleep. So and they would say, if we go out, they say, oh, Cinderella has to go home. So I'll tell you something. Part of my me time, and I think why I'm able to bounce back very well at the start of every day, I try to get to bed by 9 o'clock. There are exceptions when that happens, but generally, I am in bed. I'm fast asleep. If you try to speak to me after 9, you're doing it at your own risk because I might be saying a lot of nonsense. So I try to get a window where I get a clear 8 hours of sleep. The other thing is I try to exercise now quite a bit, and I think that helps me. So I feel rejuvenated when I start my day, and then I go into my slots and say, this morning, this is what I'm going to do. This afternoon, this is what I'm going to do. And this evening, this is what I'm going to do. I know the next question you want to ask me, so I'm just going to answer for you.
Let me see if you're right. Go ahead.
So I'm going to say, no, I have my life has been my family and my career. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do have three children, but a lot of my personal time is for me and no one else.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to ask that. Actually, what I was really going to ask, it's not even part of the interview. It's more so on a personal basis, especially the fact that you said you're a lot between 6 and 8 to specifically, you know, deal with family, especially if you're overseas, to make those calls, to network. Doesn't it get mundane doing the same routine task over and over again?
Actually, no, because there's always something different. There's always something new, there's something different. Right, right. And, you know, even with raising boys and girls, the challenges I had with my daughter when I, you know, at the end of my work week, my work day, I would say, if I'm in a meeting, people, I need to leave at 4:30 because I need to speak to my kids. So the challenges I would have my daughter, the things I need to discuss with her, the things I need to go through with her, would be very different to what I need to go through with my boy. So I always found that there was something new, there's something exciting. I mean, my 11-year-old, I think he's 30 years. I don't think he's 11.
Nice.
He is. Obama is a child different like any other child I've known. He's very articulate. He challenges me, which is something I couldn't do as a child growing up. Exactly. So I appreciate that about him. And, you know, there's always something exciting or different with him. So I don't feel it's mundane at all.
All right. And I really appreciate that, especially for the people listening right now. You know, the power of scheduling and the importance of ensuring that you focus on you, not just your company and your work, but you and your family. So, you know, thank you for that, even on a personal basis. And I know a lot of the listeners can also thank you for that. Let's segue into, you know, your professional life and segue into the importance of why we do She Speaks right here on Radio Caribbean International. You're representing yourself, you're representing women in, you know, industries definitely dominated by men. What were some of the challenges that you face in your various, industries that you've worked in, sports, a predominantly male-dominated industry, and now you're in the petroleum industry. What is that like?
So if I can talk a little bit about sports, I remember going to the Marshall Field, you know, young girl with her camera, and I don't want to say who my counterparts were at the time, but I find that, you know, a woman in sports tended to be interesting. So I found that, you know, something would happen on in Premier League, and Tennyson would send me a note and say, you know, did you know so-and-so happened? There's a trade going on. What do you think about that? So I found that, you know, although I was female in sports, maybe because it was a little different, mm-hmm. I found that, you know, in terms of getting information and people helping me along, I found that was fairly easy. Every time I went to, when it was, you know, secondary school sports, or I went to the Marshall Field. Well, I'm a little rougher, so I would go to Marshall just because it's guys playing, and don't think if I want the story, you know, you're going to keep me out of the story. So right. I would come and say, you know, I'm Deborah. At the time, I was Raphael for DBS. I want to record the game. Can I go ahead and can I do an interview with you? I like what VSABC is doing. I think that's my club. And, you know, so I found that in sports, it was fairly easy. People were very receptive and would give me information or, you know, encourage me along. I'm not saying that it's not easy in the petroleum industry. What I can say is in my career, I have found that women have to work, you know, three times as hard as men to get to the top. So mindful of that and mindful in my early days in 2004 when I just came in, understanding that, you know, I came in and I was leading a male sales team. That's a different dynamic. Men are a little different in how they want to be led to how women are in terms of how they want to be led. So I had to be mindful of that. And, you know, there were challenges because, hey, I am new to the fuel industry. The people I was leading, they were in the industry long before me, mm-hmm. and I was coming in as their leader. So, you know, I found that I had to always hit my targets to say, hey, allow me to lead you because I know what I'm doing. As I journeyed on in the industry and I went, you know, to lead the sales team and then to Dominica and a series of other things within Saul, what I found is that, you know, to be taken seriously, you have to excel.
Yeah.
So you can't go into an industry where men are doing well and you are coming in at the back of the line and you are not excelling. So whether it was a training or presentation that I went to, I was mindful that, yes, I'm representing St. Lucia, but I'm representing the female gender. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm extremely competitive. If we had an exam or anything we had to do for safety or anything, my goal was I'm going to be the guy. Sorry. That was always my goal. Mm-hmm. So that drives me to just be mindful that, you know, the industry, yes, is male-dominated, but if you excel, you are going to make your mark. And I went to Dominica, really, really difficult market. I went through a Category 5 hurricane. That in itself was a whole other story by itself. But that experience taught me about being strong. That experience after Hurricane Maria taught me how to do without things I thought I needed.
Mm.
So I did 6 months without electricity, bathing in the river, and I did not have internet. I would just get onto my Kindle, because we had a generator at our plants in Dominica, charge my Kindle, and I would just read, you know? So that experience too helped me understand that, hey, if you do well at this, if you excel at this, you will be noticed. And I think my journey in leadership and leading a team started in Dominica, and maybe that's, I think we did a really great job in Dominica. We were able to turn the business around in 4 years, and maybe that's why I am where I am today.
Definitely. Now, we're talking about sales and petroleum. So, like, to the layman, it's like, but gas selling itself. Can you tell us, like, a little bit more about what is involved in the sales and marketing of petroleum?
Yeah, that's actually an excellent question. So there's the myth that, you know, and thank you for allowing me because I love to talk about Saul.
I see that.
The myth that, you know, the two competitors in Ireland, we sell the same product. That's not true. So, yes, we have what is called commingled stock at Hess, at Buckeye. So the ship comes in and fills up the tank and we commingle. But what makes the product different is the additive that goes into the fuel. And the additive is, I like to explain when I break it down for my children, it is like soap. The soap that cleans your engine, that the engine can perform, that the fuel can perform well, so you don't have sooting. So the additive and the additive that we put in is what makes our fuel is called Go Further, because it will give you that additional miles on the road. So, yes, there's the perception that fuel sells itself, but no.
Mm.
Differentiated fuel needs some marketing. So we do, for example, ultra-low sulfur fuel, ultra-low sulfur diesel, because a lot of the newer cars now, the newer engines, cannot take sulfur because sulfur is a corrosive agent.
Right.
They'll open a whole kind of room to talk about fuel. But because it's a corrosive agent in the sulfur, many of the newer vehicles cannot take any fuel that has sulfur. So Saul was first to market on not just low sulfur diesel in St. Lucia, because this happened under my watch in 2014, but we were first to market on ultra low sulfur diesel. And explaining to our customers, so we have ultra low sulfur at the marinas at IGY, our customers, explaining to our customers that if you want the best diesel, lowest sulfur diesel on island, check sulfur.
Definitely. Now, if I had second downs, I'm definitely switching now. So thank you. Thank you to that. You spoke about while you were in Dominica and had to just spend a lot of time reading. Can you recommend maybe two or three books, or as many as you possibly can, that probably influence your life and, you know, helped you stay on that track that you're on right now?
Wow. So, you know, when people ask me that, I always come to Stephen Covey. I always come to Covey's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Right. Great book.
And I think because I am a marketer, I I like to talk about, you know, a lot of leadership books that I read, that I've read. The more recent one is Leading from the Front. And, you know, what I like about that book is it talks about, and even in this pandemic, I can relate a lot, you know, in what I've read in that book. It tells you that a leader can't be, you can't be at the back, you can't be behind your desk. You can't lead people from behind your desk. You have to be at the front. Leadership is best seen in action. And that drives me because although I am the manager, let me tell you, I can drive the fuel truck.
Nice.
And I can, you know, a friend of mine, I know they listen in Dominica, made a bet with me one time. He said, you know, I said, of course I can drive the bulk truck. I have a Class C license. So he came to the terminal and he actually lost that bet. So it needs to be that a team member of mine is down. I may not want to take the fuel truck and drive it to Grozny to deliver fuel, but I can take that articulated vehicle with that 7,000-gallon trailer and take it to Buckeye, load it up, and bring it back in the yard that the next driver does not have to go through the long wait at Buckeye. So that's how I believe in leading. I believe that there's nothing, and probably that's a key message I want anyone listening. If you want to move up in an organization, there should be nothing too small for you to do.
Exactly.
Don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. So I will go to the LPG plant, and I will go under the filling shed, and I will fill a cylinder. So when our staff tell me that the cylinder has 20 pounds, I can go and do a test on a cylinder to ensure that what they say they're giving the customer, they're giving the customer. So you can't lead if you're afraid to get your hands dirty. If you want to move up, and especially as women, because we have to work so hard to be noticed, we have to work so hard to move up, be willing to go through the pain of doing everything you need to from the bottom of the organization way up to the top, and you will make it.
Definitely. Let me tell you, that's words of advice. And I definitely think, especially to the young ladies listening right now, listen carefully and take note. Now, as we close this interview, and I thank you so much for taking this opportunity, and I hope I did a good job of making you feel comfortable.
You did an amazing job. I was nervous, but you did an amazing job.
I'm happy.
I think once we started talking, I was okay. I got through, but I just want to say you spoke about a mantra of mine.
Yes.
And I want to just talk about this a little.
Yes.
Because I know as women, many times, you know, we have our kids. You know, we go through difficulty raising our children, sometimes because I went through a difficult divorce. And, you know, we worry that we won't make it because things are so rough, things are so hard. But I want to tell anybody listening to my voice right now, I grew up in Conwy. I grew up in the ghetto. I grew up not knowing the things that I have now. But I believe firmly that my dad told me this, and I kept it with me. Where you start in life is not a sign of where you will finish. So wherever you are right now in your career, wherever you are right now in your situation, that's not the end. That is just the valley. The hilltop is coming, but you have to set goals, and you have to work at these goals, and you have to be prepared to give up something to achieve these goals.
Definitely. Let me tell you, this interview was so inspiring for even myself. I think that's why the interview went so smoothly, because I was asking questions for myself, really and truly. So I really want to thank you so much for being such a great inspiration and continue to do excellent. But final question before we go. What next?
I know my boss is listening, and you know, and let me tell you, women, don't be afraid to speak life into what you want. Speak it, for they say there's power in the tongue. Mm-hmm. So I say all the time that I am going to be the first female regional manager of a major petroleum company.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that, you know, we joke about it that, you know, when I got promoted, that so I am the third female manager in Seoul and the first female manager leading a major petroleum company throughout the Eastern Caribbean. So I speak life into my journey. I say that I am going to get my boss's job. I am going to excel with God's grace, and I know he's listening, so I want him to know. I am going to do so well in this job with God's hands over me that he's going to give me his job when he retires.
Claim it, sister.
Claim it.
And of course, make sure that when you do that, you send all your advertising budget right here on Radio Caribbean International. We appreciate
it. Actually, I've had a long relationship with Radio Caribbean, with Iowa and everything. And when I came back, I said, you know what? People kept telling me, you know, Deborah, we were not hearing anything about Saul. And I believe that as marketers, even when things are down, you don't do nothing. You don't bury your head in the sand and do nothing. So I believe in advertising. I have a great relationship with Radio Caribbean and the many other radio stations who are listening. I intend to build on that relationship. Thank you so much for the interview. My phone is going crazy. And oh my God. Okay, so let me just say to a few people, thank you to all my friends who have supported me through this journey, because, you know, a girl needs good girlfriends.
Yep.
So they're messaging me, telling me, oh, you keep talking about Sarah Lee and you're not talking about this. So I want to thank all of my friends who are brothers together, listening to the interview. And I want to thank a very special friend, a male friend of mine, who, you know, I was working on an acquisition. I didn't believe that I could have done it. I didn't believe in myself. I was like, oh, my God, can I do this? Is this too much? Am I chewing on too much? And he kept telling me, you've got this. Deborah, you've got this. So last year, we won our largest contract in Dominica. We won the power contract with the Dominica Electricity Company. And when I got it, I called him. I said, oh, my God, we did it. We did it. I was literally in tears. So you need that in your life. You need friends who believe in you. You need friends who tell you that you're a superwoman and you can do this. And when you have friends propping you up like that, all you can do is keep excelling. So thank you to my friends.
Right. Big up to that friend. Thank you so much. I know you're a very busy person, and I know people will be calling you and say, oh, my goodness, the interview was amazing. I have a couple of people, past students of yours, already messaging on the platform saying, oh, that was so inspiring, and they can't wait to get their goals sorted out like this. So thank you so much, and we wish you a very, very, very productive 2021.
Thank you so much. And for those who are reaching out on the platform, I'm always willing to sit with young people. I can be reached on 484-6116. This is my local number. If anyone listens and would like me to share a bit of my story, would like me to encourage them in some way, please feel free to reach out.
Thank you so much. And you have yourself a wonderful day, all right?
Thank you very much. I'm going to come to RTI to look for you.
Whenever you are, I'm here.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, good day. Yeah. What a wonderful interview right here on Radio Caribbean International. Miss Deborah Edward, thank you so much for that. Very inspiring. And of course, right here on Radio Caribbean International, I was about to say Youth and Plug once again. She Speaks, brought to me the kind compliments of our sponsor, Bank of St. Lucia.